Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have updates on a powerful earthquake that struck Mexico, Hurricane Irma's destructive path, two more hurricanes, and wildfires burning across the West. Then on our Capitol Report, we'll have details on President Trump's repeal of DACA, which has long protected Dreamers from deportation, and some local reactions. Then, hear part one of an East County Magazine special report on dam safety in San Diego County based on newly released documents we've obtained that raise disturbing safety questions. Learn about a county emergency declaration for a hepatitis A outbreak that has now reached East County. On Destination East County, hear about festivities including a powwow, grape stomp, and an art show this weekend, upcoming Apple Days, Oktoberfests, and more. And finally, our newsmaker interview today is with Ray Lutz, founder of Citizens Oversight in El Cajon, who has a troubling warning about AB 840, a bill that could weaken election oversight in California and negate a court victory won by Citizens Oversight against San Diego's Registrar of Voters. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on some emergency breaking news. An 8.1 earthquake has struck Mexico off the west coast near Chiapas and Oaxaca early Friday, killing at least dozens of people, though that death toll is expected to rise significantly. The quake is the strongest in a century to hit Mexico, and aftershocks have also triggered tsunamis, causing coastal flooding. The U.S. Geologic Survey predicts many more fatalities and major economic loss, and there are reports of many buildings collapsed and millions without power. Meanwhile, Mexico's east coast is awash in heavy rains and strong winds from Hurricane Katia, a Category 1 hurricane off Veracruz. A hurricane warning is in effect for Cabo Rojo to Laguna Verde. Mexico sent relief to Houston to help the United States during Hurricane Harvey rescue efforts. So far, President Trump has not indicated whether the U.S. will come to the aid of our neighbors in Mexico, where a red alert has been issued and international relief efforts are being mounted. Now in the U.S., just after Hurricane Harvey devastated Houston, Hurricane Irma is now wreaking havoc in the Caribbean and heading toward the U.S. mainland. Irma is one of the strongest hurricanes ever recorded in the Atlantic, with wind speeds up to 185 miles an hour. It slammed into the U.S. Virgin Islands as a Category 5 hurricane, also ravaging islands throughout the Caribbean. The devastating storm is on track to slam into Florida this weekend as a still-strong Category 4 hurricane. Authorities have urged Florida residents to evacuate immediately, emphasizing that Irma is one of the most damaging storms ever to strike U.S. soil. Irma could still shift to cause serious damage farther north along the eastern seaboard after hitting Florida. Now on its heels, Hurricane Jose is now a Category 4 hurricane barreling through the Caribbean, and Hurricane Katia, a Category 1 hurricane, has just struck Mexico's eastern coast. Climate change is causing ocean waters to warm to the hottest levels on record, fueling these extreme storms. Across the world, India, Pakistan, and Africa have all had devastating flooding in August and September, while in California and across the West, the worst wildfire season on record is taking a devastating toll on cherished landmarks such as Yosemite National Park and the Columbia Gorge River Valley, as well as urban centers such as Los Angeles. In Glacier National Park in Montana, the historic Sperry Chalet has burned to the ground. The Trump administration's denial of climate change and appointment of climate change deniers to head up the Environmental Protection Agency and NASA, which includes the National Weather Service, assures that no actions are likely to be taken to slow or halt climate change. That means the U.S. policy will be limited to battling wildfires and cleaning up after disasters such as Hurricanes Harvey and Irma rob thousands or even millions of their homes, while failing to take actions to prevent such catastrophic events from occurring in the future. That's akin to aiding crime victims while turning a blind eye to the causes of crime in order to prevent it. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Capital Report. President Donald Trump's Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has announced he will end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA, program that shields young people brought to the U.S. as children from deportation. But he gave Congress 6 months to pass legislation to change that, leaving an estimated 800,000 Dreamers in limbo, fearful of being sent back to homelands that some don't even remember, places where dangers caused many of their families to flee and seek safety in the United States. These young people are innocent of crimes and are productive members of American society. They are not criminals. Nobody eligible for DACA can have a criminal record of any felony nor pose any security threat to the United States. The Washington Post has reported that 97% of the Dreamers protected by DACA are either working or students in school. At least 72% of the top 25 Fortune 500 companies have employees who are DACA recipients, according to a letter signed by the companies and sent to President Trump asking that DACA not be repealed. Around 1,000 DACA recipients are also currently serving in the U.S. military, McClatchy News Service reports. Many of those play critical roles in the military as translators, since they speak a variety of languages needed, but now face deportation. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly has reportedly opposed rescinding DACA. California has more DACA recipients than any other state, around 200,000 young people, or 1 in 4 of all DACA recipients. There are also an estimated 68,000 Dreamers in Houston, still reeling from the hurricane and flood tragedies, and now fearing they could be forced to leave the U.S. That includes heroes like Jesus Contreras, a 23-year-old paramedic who rescued many flood victims in Houston after Hurricane Harvey. He says, "We're as American as we can be," NBC reports. Another heroic DACA recipient lost his life attempting to save others in Houston's floods, People magazine reported. DACA was an executive order issued by President Barack Obama after Congress failed to pass any comprehensive immigration reform. Trump's order repeals DACA and also immediately halts any new admissions to the program, while Congress must again determine whether or not to protect these vulnerable young people. The DREAM Act has failed every time it was introduced in Congress previously, due to obstruction by Republicans, who now control both the House and Senate. However, there are some signs that could change. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan, in a radio interview just before the Trump administration revoked DACA, stated, "I don't think he should do that. I believe that this is something that Congress has to fix." Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, one of Trump's staunchest supporters, also voiced support for keeping the DACA program earlier this month, according to NBC. Democrats, meanwhile, remain united in both houses in favor of protecting Dreamers and restoring DACA. Locally, all three Democratic congressional members have been outspoken in support of DACA. San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis calls it a rousing success, noting that Dreamers are earning an average of $17 an hour and nearly half are in school. Over the next decade, Dreamers are expected to contribute $500 billion in economic activity, Davis notes, adding, "The Dreamers are contributing to America in a positive way, and they should be allowed to keep contributing." Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican from San Diego, seemed to support Trump's action, calling Obama's unilateral creation of DACA unlawful. But he noted that the onus is now on Congress to address the challenge for the long haul. "With respect for our nation's laws, a desire to enhance the integrity of our borders, and a sense of compassion to those who were brought here in their childhood years ago, and wish to stay as productive members of our communities." Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter has previously voiced support for ending the DACA program and has been silent since Trump's announcement. But one of his Democratic opponents, Amar Campa Najjar, is speaking out. "Shame on you, Donald Trump, for breaking your promise to these Dreamers. You met with DACA recipients and you assured them that you were going to deal with DACA with heart," Campa Najjar recalls. "Let's restore that promise and call on Congress to pass the DREAM Act and permanently protect these young people and allow them a chance at the American dream."
After the Trump administration announced repeal of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, thousands of people have taken to the streets in cities across the nation to rally in support of protecting the Dreamers, young people brought to the U.S. as children by undocumented parents. Those young people now face deportation under President Trump's executive order unless Congress takes action within 6 months to protect them. The rallies included an event in San Diego that drew a large crowd. San Diegans are also speaking out on social media and in letters to the president. Activist Martha Sullivan denounced the president's threat against 800,000 young people for whom America is home, including 68,000 living in hurricane-ravaged Houston, stating, "This is not only the essence of bullying, it is sadism." San Diego State University's student body president and other officers have sent a letter to President Trump urging him to retain the DACA program. The letter notes that SDSU is one of the most diverse universities in our nation, adding, "This diversity is critical to preparing our students to work in San Diego's binational economy and a global workforce. Our students, regardless of their immigration status, are valued members of our educational community." San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer, a Republican, issued a statement calling on Congress to protect the Dreamers. "We are not going to fix our immigration problems on the backs of innocent children," the mayor states, adding, "The young men and women here under DACA, many who are living in the only country they have ever known, are students, innovators, business owners, and veterans who enrich our country and contribute to our economy and our culture." In Hollywood, some celebrities are also speaking up for Dreamers, including Cher, who is of Mexican-American descent. Raised in poverty in the Imperial Valley, Cher went on to become a singing and acting superstar. Now she has tweeted that she is willing to open her own home to shelter young people facing deportation. Similarly, Apple CEO Tim Cook has said that his company employs 250 Dreamers, adding that Apple will fight for them to be treated as equals. The Trump administration has contended that the DACA program, created by President Barack Obama by executive order, was executive overreach. Numerous states have sued, demanding that Trump overturn it. Republican Steve King, an Iowa congressman who supports DACA repeal, has stated, "The president does not have the authority to waive immigration law, nor does he have the authority to create it out of thin air." Trump promised his right-wing base on the campaign trail to repeal DACA, but later told a group of young Dreamers that he would show compassion towards them, a statement that seems at odds with his executive actions this week. President Obama has weighed in on that action, which he says was not required legally. "It's a political decision and a moral question," the former president says. "Whatever concerns or complaints Americans may have about immigration in general, we shouldn't threaten the future of this group of young people who are here through no fault of their own, who pose no threat, who are not taking away anything from the rest of us." President Trump himself seemed to waffle again on the issue just one day after issuing his controversial executive order, tweeting, "Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit this issue," he claimed. Some analysts expect Republicans in Congress to use restoration of DACA protections as a wedge issue to leverage support from Democrats for other Republican priorities, such as tax reforms or funding the border wall. Other analysts suggest that a hard line on deporting Dreamers could cost the GOP key seats in California and perhaps other places with heavy Latino populations, potentially jeopardizing the ultra-conservatives' control of Congress. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Valerie Watts with a special report from East County Magazine in part one of our investigation into local dam safety. The state of California has released data on dam safety in California, which found that 9% of dams statewide fall below satisfactory and could pose potential hazards in severe storms or earthquakes, including 9 dams in San Diego County. The data, previously kept secret due to terrorism concerns, was disclosed after the Oroville Dam spillway failure triggered concerns raised by the public and media, including East County Magazine, which recently put in a request for dam safety data in San Diego. East County Magazine has obtained that data and is the first media outlet to analyze the risks of local dams. A state report revealed that of 54 dams in San Diego County, 9 are listed in only fair condition and the rest are in satisfactory, the highest rating. No local dams were ranked poor or unsatisfactory. Fair is not a passing grade, however, when it comes to dams. Fair means the dams are likely to hold up under normal capacity, but could have serious problems in an earthquake or with excessive precipitation. The dams rated as fair locally are at Lake Barrett, El Capitan Reservoir in Lakeside, Lake Hodges, Lake Morena in Campo, Mount Woodson in Ramona, Lake Murray in East San Diego, Savage Dam at Otay, Sweetwater Main Dam in Bonita, and Lake Wolford in Escondido. Of those 9 dams listed in fair condition locally, 8 also have downstream hazards rated extremely high, meaning considerable loss of human life and property is likely. The extremely high risk classification is given to dams that may impact highly populated areas or critical infrastructure, or that have short evacuation times. The 9th local dam, Mount Woodson, has a high downstream hazard. 4 of the local dams are listed as receiving additional spillway evaluation. They are El Capitan, Lake Hodges, Morena, and Savage dams. Statewide, 94 dams are on the additional spillway evaluation list. Some of the dams with a fair rating have reservoirs that have been mostly drained by the City of San Diego to meet its water supply needs, such as Morena and Barrett, at 8% and 36% capacity currently, according to records from the City of San Diego. 6 years of drought also drained down water through evaporation, though heavy winter rains partially replenished water levels. Some are nearly full, such as Lake Murray at 89%, while others, such as El Capitan at 37% capacity, are far from full. But even when a reservoir is only partially filled, an earthquake could pose risk to those downstream in some areas if a dam were to rupture. More extreme storms due to climate change could also heighten risks from in the past. Most of these dams with potential problems locally are owned by the City of San Diego. Mount Woodson is owned by Ramona Municipal Water District, Sweetwater, Maine by the Sweetwater Authority, and Lake Wolford by the City of Escondido. 10 News ran a story on the $7.5 million upgrades at Sweetwater, a concrete dam built in 1888 and recently deemed unsafe. The Sweetwater Dam is 112 feet high and 700 feet wide. Of greatest concern in East County is the El Capitan Dam in Lakeside, a hydraulic fill dam made of rocks built in 1934. This dam is even bigger at 237 feet tall and 1,170 feet wide, and it no longer meets state standards. The El Capitan Dam is capable of storing 113,000 acre-feet of water. Lying in its path, according to a recent San Diego Union-Tribune report, are heavily populated areas including 4 elementary schools, 3 high schools, and 2 convalescent homes. If a flood of water were to break through or overflow from El Capitan, it could also wipe out the Las Colinas Jail in Santee before flowing to Qualcomm Stadium and inundating Mission Valley, Old Town, the Mission Bay area, and major thoroughfares including Interstates 5, 805, and 163. East County Magazine has requested additional information on the 9 local dams that failed to receive satisfactory ratings, including the 4 slated for spillway evaluations, to learn why they did not pass muster and find out what steps are planned to make them safer to protect tens of thousands of people living, working, or going to school downstream from these potentially dangerous dams.
The county has declared a hepatitis A emergency after an outbreak locally has killed 15 people and hospitalized hundreds more. 70% of those cases are in homeless people or illicit drug users. Since El Cajon also has a high homeless population, East County contacted the City of El Cajon to ask if the hepatitis outbreak has spread to the East County community. Councilman Gary Kendrick has advised us the county has identified that some of these cases have been within the City of El Cajon. The 2 most effective ways to prevent spread of hepatitis A are vaccines and improved sanitation. The county is working to vaccinate high-risk populations such as homeless individuals and drug users, and is also recommending vaccines for food handlers, healthcare workers, social workers, and others in contact with high-risk individuals. At a meeting between El Cajon City staff and county officials on August 29th, the county requested to put 1 or more hand-washing stations in El Cajon. Several possible locations were discussed. The county will pay for a station at a parking lot east of Prescott Promenade downtown and may also at a station on county property near the library. The county has also ordered hand-washing stations in the city of San Diego, which the county has criticized for failing to provide proper sanitation for its large homeless population. Now the county has hired a contractor to power wash streets in the city of San Diego to help stop spread of the disease. The outbreak shows that providing help for homeless people is not only a humanitarian issue, but also a public health concern. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a concert by the Kelly Ray Band in downtown El Cajon, the Saquon Powwow, the first ever Ramona Grape Stomp, an art show and reception with famed artist Jack Jordan, and a twilight tasting at Mission Trails.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Lemon Grove Lions Club Salsa Fiesta, an International Day of Peace in La Mesa, Julian Apple Days Fiesta, and Apple Time Tea, and Kids Dance Company's new show Bamboozled, all in September. Then in October, you can enjoy Oktoberfest in La Mesa and El Cajon, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, Kids Care Fest in Lakeside, and the annual Borrego Days Desert Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its 28th annual powwow on September 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Saquon Reservation's powwow grounds next to the Saquon Casino. This three-day tribal gathering attracts participants from across the nation and is open to the public. Saquon's powwow features traditional Native American dances, hand drum contests, bird singing and dancing competitions, authentic Indian cuisine, and more. You can find scheduling details at the Saquon Powwow Facebook page.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert series continues each Friday night through September at Promenade Park. You're invited to bring a picnic dinner or arrive early and dine at one of downtown El Cajon's restaurants before enjoying the outdoor concerts from 6 to 8 p.m. Upcoming artists include the Kelly Ray Band on September 8th, Sirens Crush on September 15th, The Petty Breakers on September 22nd, and on September 29th, the season finale with the Mighty Untouchables. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
The first annual Ramona Grape Stomp is set for September 9th from 12 noon till 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center Pavilion at 421 Aqua Lane in Ramona. To celebrate the harvest of grapes throughout the Ramona Valley, this fun family event will offer attendees the opportunity to squish grapes between their toes in grape stomping challenges, with prizes awarded to the best stompers. Attendees can also taste award-winning wine from local wineries and check out food, arts and crafts, and children's events. You can get tickets at RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Works by Jack Jordan, a distinguished El Cajon artist, art teacher at Grossmont College and former art director of the Evening Tribune, will be displayed at the Olaf Weghorst Museum in El Cajon from September 9th through the 28th, with a reception on September 9th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. This is a benefit event to honor Jordan and raise funds for the aging artist's medical expenses. Many aspiring artists will recall learning to paint with help from How to Paint the Old West, written and illustrated by Jack Jordan. His works have been shown in many galleries in the United States and Mexico. His lifelike portraits have included famous historical figures, from Native American chiefs to frontiersmen and military heroes. His landscapes and seascapes bring to life scenes from nature in the American West. For more information on the Jack Jordan Art Show and Reception, you can visit weghorstmuseum.org.
Kiwanis clubs in East County are combining their efforts to raise funds for their youth scholarships and community sponsorships by presenting Twilight Tasting at the Trails from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, September 9th. The event, which will feature craft beers and wines from local breweries and wineries, as well as a variety of tasty foods from local restaurants, will be in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. For tickets, you can call Kiwanis at 619-212-9132.
Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
The Interfaith Council of La Mesa invites the public to join millions of people around the world participating in activities to celebrate the United Nations International Day of Peace on September 17th at 3 p.m. in Aztec Park. The program will feature speakers from various faiths and traditions as well as music. For more information, you can visit interfaithlamesa.org.
The Lemon Grove Lions Club is hosting a Salsa y Salsa Fiesta on September 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. to raise money to buy new bleachers for Lemon Grove Little League. The event will be held at the Monte Vista Auditorium. There will be salsa tasting and salsa dancing. Lemon Grove Mayor Pro Tem Jennifer Mendoza says the bleachers have safety concerns, adding, "Lemon Grove is one of the poorest communities in San Diego. Our Little League has been here for some 50 years and is showing its age, so our Lions Club adopted it as our project. Contact Jennifer Mendoza, LG, at gmail.com for tickets or to enter the salsa tasting contest."
If you love apples, the Julian Apple Days Festival on September 23rd and 24th is the place to be. Located at Mangini Winery in historic Julian, the event features Julian's famous apple pie, gold panning demonstrations, a falconry performance, live music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and more. This festival harkens back to the early 1900s, when Julian won a prestigious award from an apple growers association and began a fall Apple Day festival. The town now has a 2-month-long Apple Day celebration, culminating with the Apple Festival and the coronation of Mr. and Mrs. Apple Days. You can learn more at visitjulian.com and click on the calendar of events to find details on the Apple Days Festival.
As the days start to shorten and the mountain air turns nippy, our thoughts drift to warm drinks and apples, and then to Julian. Now you can indulge during the season with an apple-themed tea at Julian Tea and Cottage Arts. From September 21st through the 25th, they are offering an apple-themed menu highlighting that Julian specialty. Their special tea features Hungarian apple soup, apple-themed finger sandwiches, scones with apple butter, an apple dessert, and, of course, fine teas. For a menu and reservations, you can visit juliantea.com.
Kids Dance Company, the acclaimed children's dance troupe based in La Mesa, presents Bamboozled at the San Diego Performing Arts Center on September 22nd and 23rd at 7 p.m. Bamboozled is a celebration of love and all it encompasses, from sorrow and acceptance to family and human friendship. The show's numbers range from a celebration of Elton John's works to Psalms for the Children of Syria, also including a fast-paced dance titled Tunisian Nights and Shimmy Sam, an upbeat tap number that just may have you dancing in your seats. For tickets to Bamboozled, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org.
Celebrating its 44th year, the popular La Mesa Oktoberfest will run from Friday, September 29th through Sunday, October 1st, bringing 3 days of Prost, or cheer. In addition to live German music and other entertainment, many vendors and crafts, you can also enjoy a beer garden serving up German and craft beers, plus, new this year, craft cocktails. For more information, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org.
The German-American Club of San Diego hosts its annual Oktoberfest at its headquarters in El Cajon over 2 weekends, September 29th through October 1st, and again October 6th through 8th. You can feast on authentic German fare, from roast ox on a spit to German pancakes, sauerkraut, and bratwurst. A German band flown in from Bavaria will perform German music ranging from polkas and waltzes to beer drinking songs. You'll also find vendors selling a variety of crafts. For details, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to the 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous. This event takes place October 13th through the 22nd at Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
Grossmont Healthcare District presents Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 14th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This event will offer potentially life-saving healthcare screenings as well as dental and vision screenings, plus fun activities such as pony rides and a rock climbing wall. For details, visit kidscarefest.org.
The 52nd annual Borrego Days Desert Festival kicks off Saturday, October 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and continues through Sunday, October 22nd. The Borrego Days Parade steps off at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st along Palm Canyon Drive and Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs, complete with pre-parade flyover, floats, marching bands, and trick-riding Western cowboys. Borrego Days also includes arts and crafts and a carnival, plus live music and dancing under the stars on Saturday night. For more information, you can visit borregodays.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. My special guest today is Ray Lutz, the founder of Citizens Oversight. And among the many things that Citizens Oversight has been doing, they've been very active in election integrity. Ray has gone around the country observing vote counts, and he's had a lawsuit against San Diego's Registrar of Voters. And now he's here today to talk to us about that, but also a piece of legislation of concern regarding voting integrity in Sacramento. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary. I'm glad to be here.
So the bill is AB 840. Tell us why we should be concerned about this.
AB 840 was what one reason we've got to be concerned is at the 11th hour, they modified this bill. And maybe this is the way this assembly, our legislature works in general, but it's a very disgusting thing to see. And as you're watching it, on August 24th, they amended this bill substantially by adding a whole big section to it. And this is after all of the hearings and everything else has happened. And now it's going through the final vote. Maybe even being, so far, there hasn't been much objection to it.
Now, I just looked this up, and as of noon on Friday, the bill is still awaiting action by the full Senate, after which I believe it would have to go back to the Assembly to approve the amendments and then on to the governor's desk. So, listeners, there is still time for you to weigh in and let your legislators know if you have concerns about this bill, AB 840. So tell us what the changes were that were put into this bill that was originally not controversial, that's made it of concern to an election integrity activist.
The things that they changed, they added a section about section election code 15360, which deals with the 1% manual tally. Now, the manual tally audit is done at the end of the election. That is during the canvassing period, they call it, after the election day, and then during the next about a month. Is the canvassing period before the election is certified. And during that time, they do a manual count of the actually taking the paper ballots out and having people manually tally those and compare them with the computer result.
Very important because we all know that computer results can sometimes be tampered with. It's happened in other places. Won't go into all the details now, but I've certainly won national awards in the past for exposing in my reports problems with these electronic machines and even interviewing a hacker from inside the Diebold Election Company on exactly how they used software to flip votes.
So it's a good practice to have these audits. California has a pretty good law if they actually would follow it. And that is that they are supposed to take 1% of the precinct's sample of all of the ballots and then tally those. Precincts are used as a work unit. This is usually the thing that they process precinct by precinct, but sometimes they may do them batch by batch. There's other ways to do it. But it's basically work unit by work unit. The law says you're supposed to use 1%. And 1%, when you think about it, is whenever you do a percentage, it's 1% of everything, not 1% of part of it. You don't say 1% of half of it. That isn't
too right. You can't just say we're going to do 1% of precincts in La Jolla and ignore East County something.
This is actually what they've done in this bill. They said that we want to do 1%, but only of the ballots that were done at the polling places or were done very early vote by mail ballots and already processed by election night, excluding all of the vote by mail ballots that are either brought into the polling place or weren't quite received yet, were placed in the mail or brought in by election day.
Well, that's pretty significant because, of course, in today's news cycle, with everybody getting news online and the internet spreading things viral, anything that happens in the news can change votes in those final days. So a vote by mail ballot cast, you know, the day before the election and brought to the polling place conceivably could have a very different trend from ones that were cast weeks earlier and mailed in.
Yeah, it's not fair to treat those any differently. Now, this is just the audit process. All of these ballots are supposedly all tabulated and including in the final count. But what we're talking about is the fairness here of also including these ballots, all of them within a random sampling to make sure that these sections of, you know, groupings of ballots are not tampered with. If you know that the later vote by mail ballots and the provisionals are not going to be audited, then if you're a hacker, you go, well, that's the one we're going to hit. We're just going to hit those areas because they're never going to be ever checked.
Makes sense. Now, you've been involved in litigation on this, which we'll go into in a minute, but what does the bill do that has you so concerned?
Well, the bill basically says that they're not going to include those later vote by mails or provisionals within the 1% manual tally ever.
So if people are concerned about this, they should be reaching out to their legislators or reaching out to the governor and asking that this bill not be signed or that that provision be removed. And it's likely to be moving very quickly as we near the end of the legislative session, folks.
Yeah, it's AB 840. We're hoping that we can stop it. We want people to be aware of what this issue is, though, because this is a sneaky group. It's called the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials, who put this in so that the election officials could have less work to do and undermine the credibility and the confidence that we have in our elections. You know, this is after all of the, you know, Russian hacking and, you know, other things that are going on. And now they want to reduce the amount of auditing that they're doing. This is really outrageous.
What's the reason given for putting that in there?
Well, they say, well, this is how everybody's doing it, and so we're doing it that way, and so that's the way we're going to standardize.
So if everybody speeds down our highway, should we just raise the speed limit to 90 miles an hour? That doesn't make sense.
This is what we said. Just because you're doing it doesn't mean it's right. And just because someone else does it, when the officer pulls you over and says you were speeding, it doesn't work to say, yeah, but look at all the other people that are speeding. You don't deserve a ticket, officer.
That's right.
That's not going to fly.
Now, we did talk to Michael Vu about this. He's San Diego's Registrar of Voters. He says he didn't have anything to do with this, that it was this other organization.
KCO, which is as C-A-C-E-O.
That was behind it, who knows. And he has repeatedly claimed that he didn't do anything wrong, but I understand that a judge found otherwise. Way, tell us about the lawsuit you filed.
Well, when we detected, and this took a number of years for us to even figure out what was going on, we detected that they were excluding these 285,000 ballots from the audit. And we said, please include those in the audit by drawing some more batches. It would have been 8 more batches that were drawn, not a big deal, you know, that you could count 8 precincts out of 1,600. I mean, some people say they want the elections all hand-counted. We're only talking about 8 out of 800 that were left, and we're saying count those 8 by hand just to make sure everything is sound. And he said, no, he wouldn't do it. So then we said, fine, we'll take you to court. We did. We went through the trial, and we won, largely.
So for future elections, he's going to have to do this, according to the court order?
According to the court order, the judgment is that he has to include all of the vote-by-mail ballots in the audit.
Basically, this law would be circumventing what the judge said?
Yeah, that it would. And they've very sneakily done this by saying that this is about provisionals only. Now, in our lawsuit, the judge did not rule in our favor for provisionals. And this was surprising to us because the provisionals have the same logic behind them as the vote-by-mail ballots. You want to include those in this audit. He said that he was understanding our request, this was the county's position, that we were asking for even the unaccepted provisionals to be included in the audit, which makes no sense.
No.
We just were asking for the accepted and validated provisionals, once they're all accepted and tabulated, to be then included. And that was only like two batches that they would do.
Seems very reasonable.
So we didn't win that one by this judge, but we did appeal that part of it, and they appealed the other part, so it's an appeals process.
So you could still prevail on that, potentially, in
we
court.
Could still prevail in that. However, I think it might be mooted if the legislature says that they don't have to do it at all.
So basically an end run around it that this legislature is attempting to do.
And they're explaining it in the and they have an analysis of these bills.
Yeah.
The analysis says, oh, this is for provisionals and we don't want to have this done at the end of the canvas. It'd be done bad to do it at the end after the canvas. No one says that. The bill doesn't only say leave out provisionals. It actually leaves out everything from what they call the semifinal official canvas, which is the end of election night. Everything else is left out. It's all later vote by mail ballots and provisionals would be left out.
Now, we should mention that this bill,
it's AB, it's the Assembly Bill 840.
One of the co-authors on it is Lorena Gonzalez, who is a progressive Democratic representative here from San Diego County. So if people have concerns, that's another avenue would be to voice the concerns to the author. I understand you've reached out to her on this way, and what response have you had?
Well, I tried to. I called her office, and we've asked everybody who, you know, could call. We have actually had a very big response, a very gratifying response from activists in the election integrity field who have just swamped these authors and the committees with requests not to pass this. And we may be able to block it. But it was only a stroke of luck that we got this because one election official from Inyo County, who is an honest election official, called me and said, did you know about this?
Really? And so you wouldn't have even known.
We wouldn't have even known because it was being snuck through.
In the dark of the night. Just
luckily, we got word of it, and the troops have come out, and we're at the point now where we might be able to very successfully block this.
Very good. So next question, Ray, is, while there's certainly a theoretical possibility that if you look at every one of these ballots in question, it could potentially change an outcome, have you seen any evidence in the ballot counting or the ballots that you observed in San Diego to suggest that if all of these were included, these provisionals and so forth, that it actually could have changed the outcome of who won the presidential race, which is the one we're talking about here, in San Diego County?
Well, it certainly could because the race was very close between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. It was only 3.75%, around 16,000 ballots. And they were leaving out 285,000 from the audit. So that means out of that 285,000, you have to wonder, could somebody sneak in 16,000 very easily?
Did you observe anything, Ray, to make you believe that there could have been tampering to the degree that it actually might have influenced the outcome in the election? We're talking about the Democratic primary between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. In either the early ballots cast or these later provisionals and mail-in ballots that were brought to the polls?
Yes. Basically, we do think that there's things to wonder about here, primarily in the early vote-by-mail ballot set, because those we were not able to observe as well because we did not have our team positioned in the 10 days prior to the election as well. We were basically, people were trying to get out the vote and so forth and campaigning for their candidate and didn't want to go in and watch them do the counting of the ballots. At this particular registrar here in San Diego, they're also using whiteout to modify the ballots before they were scanned.
Yeah, I think that was shocking to a lot of people.
I mean, this is something you're not supposed to do that, but they admit to it.
I mean, they claimed one of the reasons for that was if you had people who were voting, let's say they were voting in the Democratic primary and they weren't really a Democrat or an independent voter, or people who were allowed to vote, that it was okay to just white these out.
Well, they may say whatever they want. The problem is they don't have a written procedure. They don't have any reports. They don't have any logging.
Did anybody observe those?
They don't use two people looking at a time. They did not let us get close enough to see what's going on.
Wow.
And so you know, that combined with the shredding truck that we notice nearby, you know, it says, you know, to make sure everything comes out the way you want.
Which Vu, I should say, we ask about that. He's claimed it was just shredding, you know, sample ballots and extra voter registration materials, but who really knows?
Well, the problem is that please don't have the shredding truck come around during this time, because then we have to worry about it. it's just not something we want to see. So there's another reason that we really suspect that. They did do a random selection of 1% of the batches and that first early vote by mail set. There was 723 batches. They chose 8. That's when we said, gee, you're not choosing the other, you know, there's another 285,000 ballots. You need to choose some more batches for that. And they said, no, they weren't going to do it. But when they chose those batches, they chose 8. Then we said, okay, give us the report for we want the report ahead of time. It's what we call the snapshot protocol, which I developed so that we can really carefully watch these audits. What you want to get is a complete report of all precincts and all batches, if they do it that way, with the totals for all the races in each one of those, so that they can't change it once they pull them. So when they do the random selection of these precincts and batches, then you have ahead of time the report. Yeah, you can look those up. But if you don't have that report ahead of time, and they pull them randomly, guess what? They can have their inside guy go back in, manipulate the results, and fix those up so that they're going to match then. So we wanted the report ahead of time. So I asked him, please give us the report before you do this random selection. No, we can't do that. We're not going to be able to give you that report. Okay, fine. So then after we filed the lawsuit, he hired 40 people to work for a week to pre-select and pull out all of these ballots from the batches and assemble them into precincts. And then even then, the count did not match the computer report that we did have ahead of time for the precincts. So talking about the whiteout, we're talking about this manipulation, 40 people for a week, the last minute change from batches to precincts. There's a lot of reasons that, and also this was the only set of ballots where Hillary Clinton won and won by a landslide. She won by like 58% to 42%.
Wow. So all the later ones that came in, you're saying Bernie Sanders won?
Bernie Sanders won the polls ballots by the opposite, 58 to 42.
So do you think it's possible that Bernie Sanders actually won San Diego County?
It's possible if they actually did that tampering, because usually people think, well, the early vote by mail ballots are going to be indicative for the rest of the race. In fact, the news media reports on those at 8 o'clock and everyone goes, oh, okay, well, we're doomed. You know, whatever
happened. Used to be the case, but it isn't always anymore.
Well, in this case, it was dramatically different than the polling place ballots flipped by 16%. I mean, usually I can imagine it's off by a few percent because, you know, the early voters may be more conservative. Maybe, you know, they're more diligent about voting early.
Possible, you know, something in the news cycle affected a lot of voters at the last minute. But that's an awful lot of, that's an awfully big difference.
It's a very big difference. And between the polling place ballots where Bernie Sanders won, the later vote by mail ballots were about 50-50 and the provisionals were very heavily landslide toward Bernie Sanders, 66 to, you know, 34. So it was basically, if you just looked at the later ballots, not including the early vote by mail ballots, Bernie Sanders won by landslide.
So if Bernie Sanders had somehow won San Diego County and the count didn't reflect that, if he had won and everyone knew about that right away, do you think that could have, could it have been enough to in some way change the outcome of the presidential election?
Well, think about it, because had the early vote by mail ballots come out in favor of Bernie Sanders, that would be the most significant because those are reported on 8 o'clock. And then everybody would go, oh my, Bernie Sanders is winning by a landslide in San Diego. And then he would win at the end because it was just a hair's breadth, 3.75%, only 16,000 ballots out of some 400,000 of the Democratic Party side. And so this would have, I think, been a big factor in the decision-making process of Bernie Sanders if he said, oh, well, gee, I won in San Diego. Maybe I should look into those other counties in California. We're number two in the state.
Yeah, because if he had won California,
even if he thought, you know, it was close in California, he may have made a decision, not given up so fast, and he may maybe at the convention, it would have been an open convention and there would have been a different decision-making process there instead of the slam dunk, DNC-controlled situation that we later found out they were completely biased in favor of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, Democratic National Committee. That's definitely
We know from those emails that were then provided to WikiLeaks that they were biased toward Hillary Clinton and against Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chair, was quite openly promoting Clinton over Sanders, which is a violation of the DNC bylaws.
Even in California, you have Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State, who's supposed to be somewhat nonpartisan, who was campaigning for Hillary Clinton, which I found very disagreeable. By the way, he has endorsed this change, this AB 840 change. Padilla has come out for that.
Interesting.
And so they are pushing this, and it's like, oh, well, the Secretary of State wants this. This is what the legislature says.
And yet
it
seems so short-sighted to me to do that. I mean, even if somehow it favored your candidate this time around, that's, first of all, that's dishonest. And secondly, who's to say who might have control of certain registrars' offices in future elections? So it just seems like it's opening the door for the potential for tampering, even if it didn't occur this time around, and we really don't know whether it did or not. Now, we should say this is not the first controversial election that Michael Vu, San Diego's registrar, has overseen. Tell us a little bit about his history in Cuyahoga, Ohio.
Well,
take us back to the presidential election that put George W. Bush.
2004. Michael Vu was a registrar of voters. They call him it's a board of elections. It's a little bit different structure that they have. But he was in charge of it there. Two of his subordinates were convicted of absentee voter fraud, actually pre-stacking the ballots. It was like carry, Bush, you know, all the carries grouped together, all the Bushes grouped together.
Actual election fraud.
They came in and they said, you know, why are you pre-stacking these? And they said, well, we want the result to come out right so it matches the computer report. And so we're just making sure that we don't have a lot of extra work to do.
It's exactly the opposite of what they're supposed to
do. You're supposed to try to find stuff that's wrong, not cover it up. And in fact, you know, if you look at it, the 1% manual tally system in California does much of the same thing. We went up to Los Angeles in review of how they do it. And if they review and count a precinct by hand, and the result is, say, either right or maybe off by one or two votes, and they just report it as a variance, no problem. But if they are off by more than that, they go into another room, they remark it, and run it back through the computer scanner, come up with a new report that could be very different from the original report. And then, of course, it compares correctly. And then they say, no problem.
So in Cuyahoga County, when the judge found these two individuals who worked for their registrar's office or whatever they call their election official's office guilty of election fraud, and I believe these were felonies, maybe later reduced to a misdemeanor, but these were crimes, the judge stated that he was not sure that they had acted alone, that they might have been working for someone higher up. And of course, I mean, the highest person in that office was Michael Vu, who wound up leaving Cuyahoga after that.
He was asked to leave, not, they say, because of that. And then he was rehired here in San Diego within 2 months, a much bigger county, somewhat as a reward, I think, for doing that. But, you know, then if you ask him, he'll say, well, that was all reversed on appeal. They really weren't convicted. But really, they admitted that they pre-stacked the ballots. But this reversal was done because the courts are sometimes corrupt. And so the corrupted court reversed that.
So it was certainly questionable. So he came here as the assistant registrar of voters at the time.
And by the way, Miriam, that was the election. This was when Kerry should have probably won Ohio, and it was given to them by the Diebold system president who said, I will give you Ohio.
Yeah, and it was the state that won the election for George W. Bush, and
that's
basically
right.
That county alone put him over.
And there was a book written about it by Richard Hayes Phillips called Witness to a Crime, where he went back in and looked at many, many counties, photographed these ballots, and recounted them, came up with a different result.
Wow. And let's talk about Diebold a minute. I once interviewed a whistleblower inside the Diebold election company who told me exactly how they were asked to put cards into machines, voting machines, to fix defective clocks, except the clocks weren't defective. And every place they did this, It flipped votes from counties that had always voted Democratic to suddenly, miraculously, they were voting Republican. He was ashamed of his role in this, and I interviewed him as a whistleblower. And within 2 days after that interview, the CEO of Diebold, who had promised to deliver the election to Bush, he was a campaign co-chair for the Bush campaign, had resigned in disgrace. The shareholders had filed a lawsuit. Very shortly after that, Diebold got out of the election business, sold off its voting machines. The Washington Post ran a story saying these machines were, you know, less reliable than slot machines. And I won a national award for that reporting. And yet, who did San Diego hire as their registrar of voters before Michael Vu got elevated to the job?
Deborah Seiler, the, I think, vice president of sales for Diebold Systems.
Yeah, so you have to wonder. I at the time that those two were hired, I remember
and they
election.
They bought a bunch of Diebold machines here, too.
Yeah, some of which our Secretary of State later decertified, the paperless, the worst of them. But we still have the optical scan voting machines, which can be tampered with. There is a paper trail. It's a little harder, but still the cards out of those. There's the possibility that they could go into a central tabulator and flip votes. So it is a very serious situation. So, Ray, for people who are upset about this and they want their vote to count and they want integrity restored to the system, what action can they take immediately on this AB 840, and what else can they do beyond that?
Okay, well, of course, the AB 840 is a matter of contacting your legislators, senators, assembly people, and maybe, you know, when it gets up to the governor's desk, if we still have time, we'll be addressing it there. We'll be having this on our front page at citizensoversight.org if you want to come and visit that and see what the status is. Now, in general, though, I want to mention that we do have a bright light at the end of this very, very dark tunnel, and that is that the newer generation of voting machine, of election machines are using, generally we want to push them toward paper ballots. And when they scan those ballots, they take a photograph of both sides of the ballot and they make a full image of the ballot.
Good.
And all of these images can be then made available. We got those from Dane County, Wisconsin. All of the ballots were made available on their website.
Do we have those in San Diego
yet? Not yet, because they don't have that great of machine. But every new machine, as they move into these new machines, and when they do move into that, we've told them, look, you don't even have to do the 1% manual tally to the same degree. If we have all of the ballots available for review, then we can do our own third-party review, and we're encouraging them to use a third-party 100% redo of the count, because it's very easy to run them back through a service provider that would then take those ballot images, reprocess them, probably lickety-split. You could do the whole county within just, you know, a number of minutes. You'd have a result from another different third party.
Very good. Well, it's great to hear that there may finally be a solution to this.
And that is what we call the Open Ballot Initiative. So if people want to visit the openballotinitiative.org, that's where we're pushing on that particular issue.
Very good. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Ray Lutz, the founder of Citizens Oversight and an election integrity activist. If you want to find out more about their work or more about AB 840 and its status, you can go to citizensoversight.org. Ray, I'm going to let you have the final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know about election integrity in California and San Diego?
Election integrity is one of the most important issues we can work on, because if you don't have integrity of your election process, then you're not going to be able to make any progress on any other issue. This is different from voter fraud issues that have been brought up by Trump, even though he calls it election integrity. His project is voter suppression. He wants to suppress voters from coming out. And that's why they're going through this election or voter fraud concept, which is really unsupported by any evidence that
Correct.
It occurs in any large way. The election integrity that we're looking at has to do with the possibility that the election officials themselves or their workers or an outside hacker can get in and manipulate the final vote in the central tabulator by
right.
changing thousands of votes at a crack.
And, of course, an outside hacker, I mean, in the old days we worried about political parties hacking, and today, of course, the concern has extended to foreign governments, notably Russia. So, Ray, I think it's very important what you're doing. I want to thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for having me.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.